This podcast examines issues on violence driven by gender inequality, a profound and widespread global health problem that is likely to have personally touched the lives of our listeners. Listen with care and compassion, and please talk to someone should anything come up for you while listening to this episode. For more resources, email svri@svri.org.
Gender or gender equality is not only women's issue. It is everyone's issue, and that includes men and boys as well.
You're listening to the Sexual Violence Research Podcast from the SVRI. I'm Elizabeth Dartnell.
And I'm Angelica Pino. Our vision is to see a world free of violence against women and children. And in this podcast, we learn how to make that vision a reality.
In today's episode, we find out why it's crucial to engage men in violence prevention interventions.
Meningers Alliance is a social change network that primarily works on transforming unequal power relations and transform patriarchy by transforming masculinities and what it means to be a man.
That is Lakshman Belbase, Global Co-Director of the Meningage Alliance. We will be meeting shortly. We are also going to introduce you to Fiona Coyette from World Vision.
World Vision is a global Christian humanitarian development and advocacy organization devoted to improving the lives of children, families, and their communities around the world.
Over the last 20 years, we've seen the process of engaging men and engaging boys in the prevention of violence against women gain momentum. And Angelica, these interventions have been really effective, haven't they?
Absolutely, Liz. And the SVRI, we have supported a number of research projects that are building the case for this strategy. In partnership with the World Bank Group, we funded several studies into interventions that engage men in Africa, Latin America, and the Middle East. Perhaps you could tell us a bit about the recent research coming out of Uganda.
Thanks, Angelica. So this research is looking to build a framework that addresses intimate partner violence in the country. The Rakai Health Sciences Program implemented an intervention called the Safe Homes and Respect for Everyone Project, or SHARE. SHARE saw some success, but there just wasn't enough involvement from men and boys. So with the help from the SVRI and the World Bank, the research team designed a study to explore barriers to engaging men in the SHARE program. What we found out was men and boys have a range of perspectives about what it means to be a man, highlighting two ideals of masculinity, one about respectability and the other to do with reputation. Both masculine norms were used to justify dominance over women and the use of intimate partner violence.
And off the back of that study, it was recommended that future interventions shift away from a focus on Western concept of masculinity and rather focusing on it from a local perspective. This idea of masculinity, a key pillar of the patriarchal order, is where many of the problems stem from. But Lakshman says men and boys are not born violent.
They are groomed into through the process of socialization to behave and act in a way they do in terms of violence or in terms of the existing attitudes and behaviors towards women and people of other gender identities. And there is also a moral obligation as well as human rights obligation for those who are the perpetrators of violence to be brought into the equation where we can stop those kind of behaviors and attitudes.
On masculinity, in Peru, for example, a group of researchers found that men build their masculine identity from childhood in sexist contexts. Basically, they grow up believing you need to dominate women to exert your power. This leads to a cascade of problems. Men start repressing their emotions, they begin thinking it's their right to sexually harass women, and they begin laying blame on the victims. And this is all made worse by the fact that society condones this.
Indeed. But thanks to a new program called Men Renounce Violence from the Cayetano Heredia University, a pilot and training curriculum was developed for community activists and government staff who work with men to prevent gender-based violence. Now, some of this violence doesn't simply come down to ideals of masculinity that have been formed early on. Being exposed to war and traumatic events can put men at risk of using unhealthy and destructive mechanisms that include violence against women. In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, for instance, the Living Peace Initiative worked with the husbands of female survivors of war-related rape and intimate partner violence. The psychosocial intervention to alter men's harmful ideas about masculinity and to give them new nonviolent coping mechanisms saw lasting change over 3 years, which is really positive.
And while we're on the subject of mental health, a recent study in Kenya has helped to answer the following question. If we support men with common mental health problems, particularly those linked to harmful alcohol and substance use, will intimate partner violence be reduced? The answer is yes. This project was carried out by World Vision, so let's hear from Fiona to find out more.
World Vision Kenya, in partnership with the Kenya Ministry of Health, with funding from World Bank Development Marketplace and the Sexual Violence Research Initiative, facilitated a pilot study that assess a WHO effective intervention, which is a psychological intervention known as Problem Management Plus, which was implemented with men, assessing the feasibility of reducing incidents of violence against women in two peri-urban communities in Kenya. Kenya has some of the highest rate of sexual and intimate partner violence in the world. And research showed that men alcohol consumption is a major contributor to violence against women. In urban Kenya, community members identified that crime, unemployment, and men excessive alcohol consumption and drug use was one of the greatest community concerns. They recognize that these concerns can be shaped reduced psychological well-being of men at individual levels, at family level, and at community level. And as well as believing that such stressors were caused by perceived incidences of violence against women. So in this complex and low-resource setting like Kenya, singling or addressing issues of crime, unemployment, or excessive alcohol drug use is costly. It is, of course, unsustainable. While attempting to only address violence against women would be incomplete without actually addressing the underlying behaviors or the underlying issues that actually contribute to violence or such behaviors. And that's why this project built on the global research that has shown treating men's mental health may have promising impacts on reducing violence in the home. So we went ahead and actually conducted an ethnographic study because we wanted to understand what were the specific issues for men in this setting. And through this ethnographic assessment, we were able to account for some community-led perception about violence against women and its link with common stressors faced by men in their alcohol use.
Let's hear a bit more from our guests now. We ask Lakshman Belbase why it is so important that men and boys are brought into discussions around gender equality and justice.
Men and boys are still in a majority of public spaces playing dominant role and leadership role. And hence, if we really want to dismantle the system, we need to bring them on board to challenge the system so that they can also become agents of change and, you know, utilize the space they already occupy to strengthen the feminist agenda in the institutions or the systems they are part in.
How does Men Engage as a network go about ensuring the meaningful involvement of men and young men and boys in these discussions on gender equality and social justice?
So Men Engage is not just a space where men are coming together or men are only there. Actually, It's a collective space where we have self-identified women's rights organizations or leaders and activists, child rights activists and leaders and organizations, youth, LGBTIQ, women, peace and security, sexual and reproductive health and rights, and those who primarily also work on specifically on transforming masculinities. So the way we go about this work is actually to apply a holistic approach to look at transforming the system. So there are various programs at the community level that our members do in terms of, you know, the kind of behavior change programs that exist in relation to challenging the stereotypical gender norms and value systems that are there. But also a lot of policy advocacy happens around bringing about political change that needs to happen at all levels of engagement. And we do this work by bringing the stories from the ground and then build on in a bottom-up approach to ensure this engagement happens in a systems transformatory approach. And we set standards around what this work with men and boys and transforming masculinities should look like, and put together a political angle to this work and work with our members to further sharpen and politicize and make the work more effective in the work we do.
We know that resistance and backlash to gender equality is an ever real presence in the work that we do. How do you, as a network, navigate these difficult conversations and address backlash?
Bringing men and boys to this conversation on and itself is a huge challenge. Because at the community level, as a mass level, generally it is still understood as women's agenda and men has nothing to do with it. So even to convince men to be part of the conversation is also one of the challenges that we see. But once they are involved in the conversation, we see and believe that they really want and are able to take on the roles and responsibilities. The big challenges that we see, as we have been observing within the broader feminist movement, is to, you know, really dismantle the system and bring about the men in power positions in this conversation. Especially when we are talking about systems change, that means we are challenging the power dynamics, the power structures that are in place, that always comes up with a lot of challenges, as we have already seen within the feminist movement. And there is a lot of challenge also towards that the work is understood to kind of, and what we often see is emasculate men, which means that a lot of men understand that this is also the work is to push men out of these power positions, and that on in itself becomes a barrier. And when we talk about systems change agenda, also one of the things that we have experienced at all levels and we keep on hearing from the members is the pushback from the men in politics or the people in politics, where, you know, there is no strong buy-in when it comes to real implementation or commitment that needs to take place in the real world. And then there is another group of men and boys who feel this work actually is about challenging men in a sense that feminism is against men narrative. And there are a number of groups of men and boys who have come together to challenge and push back against this work, and which we sometimes refer as the fundamentalist groups or the men's rights groups. And we are increasingly seeing in this current world and the gender landscape at the moment internationally that those groups are becoming more stronger and organized and pushing back against some of the works that we have been doing.
If men and boys are the main perpetrators committing acts of violence against women, you might think that interventions should only focus on them. But why doesn't that approach work?
If the aim and the is to advance gender equality and social justice, then, you know, the population that is generally privileged as a part of the patriarchal system to sit around and talk about power inequalities and oppression will be problematic because then it only revolves around the experiences of men and boys, whereas the genuine content that was supposed to be discussed and in relation to dismantling patriarchal system should be revolving around the lived experiences and how the power inequalities then translates in the lives of people who are at the margins of the margin. Without centering to these experiences, the conversations will not really lead to meaningfully add value to this broader reason or goal for which the work with men and boys actually started. But also, you know, given the work around transforming masculinities, what do we mean and what kind of transformation are we talking about? The answer actually comes from the feminist movement. We all, you know, everyone around in this world are, you know, socialized and groomed within the patriarchal system. And that also includes women and girls. And one thing that we have realized from an intersectional feminist approach is the patriarchy is thriving through various support mechanisms, primarily by men and boys, but also support from women and girls. And those who are affected from the patriarchal system also need dedicated space to, you know, heal their experiences and come together to empower themselves and bring together the kind of solidarity among those who are experiencing disproportionately because of the unequal power relations. And the empowerment work with men and women and girls and trans people should also continue.
And here is Fiona Coyette again to tell us a bit more about World Vision.
World Vision is a dedicated organization that currently running a flagship campaign to end violence against children. And we are dedicated to supporting children and families and communities to reach their full potential by tackling causes of poverty and injustice. And World Vision works over 100 countries globally.
And Fiona, how does World Vision go about protecting young women from sexual violence and abuse?
Protection for women and children begins from ourselves. And World Vision has an absolute priority in protecting children, vulnerable community. And World Vision has a zero tolerance of incidents of violence or abuse against children and other people in the communities we serve. In this case, protection for women begin by our work and as a staff of World Vision. And in this way, World Vision have mechanism to enable communities, beneficiaries, and staff to report potential cases of abuse. We do provide training for all frontline staff in how to recognize and respond to issues of sexual exploitation or sexual abuse of children or vulnerable groups. And for more than 10 years, we've provided a confidential integrity and protection whistleblower police hotline.
What would you say are some of the risk factors for child sexual abuse, and why is it important to address these risk factors in our programming?
As an organization, World Vision has prioritized this response in all our programming because continuous poverty, humanitarian crisis, conflict, violence, war, disaster, and even disease outbreak or pandemic has continuously made children or women more vulnerable, because anytime there is displacement, the people or the group that is more vulnerable are women and children. And because of this, World Vision has ensured that in all our programming, we are aware of this vulnerability and increased vulnerability of exploitation and violence for this category group, because all this poses a significant risk and even the lack of services for reporting. When there are pandemic like COVID-19, we've seen an increased abuse for children and even for women who are more reporting more abuse than before. So being aware that pandemics, war, violence predisposes the already vulnerable group to more violence, then we have to take into account effective programming that enhance prevention.
How important is that we reinforce positive messages of gender equality to boys from a very young age?
Gender equality starts at home, and some scholars have even said they start from pregnancy, because children listen to their mothers or their carers as early as they are still in the stomach. And the reason why it is important that gender equality begins at home, issues of equality are learned. The environment teaches how people should embrace equality. And because we have a significant number of young people or young boys as at an early age, we need to embrace gender equality as early as possible. Because gender is not about biological differences between the sexes. It's rather, it's a social contract. People define what it means to be a boy or a girl. And social conditioning often expect children to conform to these specific and limiting gender roles and expectation from an early age. And research has said that children start absorbing stereotypes by the age of 3, causing the world to expand for more boys and shrink girls by the age of 10. So if these things are dealt from as early as at home, then we are more likely to have a society that is not full of stereotypes. So we need to fight stereotypes, including our own, as early as the children are born. And there are several things we can also do, is we talk about it with children. Because at home, the children experience it in school or where they are playing or in the other social places for children. Let's talk about it. Let's share the care work. Let children understand how important it is to share the care work, because the care work is not the burden of a girl child or a woman. Let's embrace diverse roles models from home. Let's empower the children to speak out. Let's be able to give each one of them to actually express what they're experiencing or what they are hearing. And more important, we know how the body shame is becoming a significant toxic inequality issue. So at home, we need to stop the body shame, and we need to listen and learn from the young people on the experiences they are having.
It's clear that whilst women must remain at the centre of efforts to prevent violence against them, men must also play a role. But in which countries do we need to particularly focus our attention?
I'll focus on low resource setting because of the vulnerabilities within low resource setting, or high risk factors that exposes gender inequality, and also humanitarian setting, because we do know that inequalities increase due to displacement or conflict or violence. So I'd look at humanitarian setting or low resource setting.
What research, in your view, needs to be funded in order to further advance the strategy of engaging men and boys for gender equality?
I think there is a lot of research to be conducted, particularly in understanding comprehensive programming, because men engagement is not just an affair of the men. I think there is a lot of research that needs to happen to understand what are integrated community programming or feasible programming that can actually influence men engagement. And these include the traditional, what are some of the ways that can enhance the social norms to prevent the equal distribution of caring responsibility, particularly between men and women. I think there is still a lot that needs to be done in understanding how to actually reverse the traditional stereotypes and what is now considered as toxic masculinity.
When we say research, we need to unpack that as well to be something that is inclusive enough to actually incorporate the activism or the programmatic aspect in the research rather than only considering research as a very academic oriented exercise. So I think what kind of research is more action-oriented research to inclusive of the activism or activists in the ground who are doing the work to really dig into what is it that is really working in this area of work? What is it that are becoming major strategies that can push forward more sustainable and engaging changes in transforming masculinities or masculine norms in working towards prevention of violence?
So are our guests optimistic about the future and the direction we're headed in?
Yes, we are positive, and that's why we have been continuously putting our effort as Meninges Alliance to scale, sort of support this work. But we are only seeing positive changes based on current understanding of what this work is all about. In men's attitude among those who have, good grounding and understanding of what feminist agenda is all about. And those who have that understanding and being involved in this work, we have seen, changes in attitudes and behaviors among boys and men across all age range as well and geographies. So we are really hopeful about the possibilities that we can have in this work with men and boys and change in the behavior and attitude that we are observing towards women and also children and trans people as well, and also towards the planet.
Fiona, are you optimistic?
Indeed, I can say I see positive change, and particularly because there is more integration of gender roles reflected in women education, professional achievement, family and income contribution. We are not yet there, but of course, there are lots of change in perceptions and attitudes and also in programming that tend to change or confront the stereotypes. So indeed, we are not yet there, but I am really delighted of the fact that the world has taken and looking at how integration has happened, even in programming. If you look at humanitarian setting now, it's really a priority that gender becomes an integral part of any response. And of course, we see a lot of transformation for traditional gender roles and promotion of gender equality, which of course requires a lot of addressing of discriminatory social norms. If we continue this way, then our future generation will find a more, a more sensitive society or policymakers that are able to address issues and concern around gender equality.
Thanks to our guests, Lakshman Balbasi and Fiona Coyette, for joining us on the podcast. I am Elizabeth Dartnell.
And I am Angelica Pino. You have been listening to the Sexual Violence Research Podcast by the SBRI. To find out more about our vision, visit sbri.org.
To free the world of violence against women and violence against children, we need everyone to hear our message. So please subscribe, like, and review us on Apple Podcasts, and share this episode far and wide.
Thanks for listening, and we will see you for episode 2, where we will be discussing the importance of starting anti-violence interventions at a young age.
This podcast is produced by OG Podcasts. Find out more at ogpodcasts.co.uk.